All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, June 2nd, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a lovely 56 degrees and very sunny with a blue sky here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show George Church, Barcoded Neurons, IARPA, the National Science Foundation, Synthetic Biology Electronics, and AI. And we looked at some really scary things. We started with 2 weeks looking at bacteria and some of the genetic modification in CRISPR. Of course, Georgie Porgy Church's technology. They've been splicing and dicing life forms to see what would happen, whether they're flipping a switch on or off, or they're adding or removing. Actually, removing, right? Remember, CRISPR isn't adding. CRISPR is removing. Sometimes, though, they can replace entire cassettes with chunks of DNA, and it's as easy as dragging and dropping on a computer screen to create life on the fly. This is what they predicted. This is what the DARPA lady wanted way back when they were talking about how they were going to terraform Mars. We're going to practice on Earth first, though, so don't worry about it. We're not going to screw Mars up yet. Though I did see some weird stuff. They're now worried that maybe bacillus spores had gone up on some of the equipment to Mars, and maybe we are responsible for contaminating a new planet. But anyway, so we had looked at this project that went hand in hand with Obama's brain initiative that he declared back a few years ago. IARPA decided to spin themselves out an organization modeled on our favorite love to hate DARPA to be able to accelerate innovation. But this innovation isn't for the Department of Defense. Oh, no, no. It is for the Central Intelligence Agency. We also found out Amazon stepped right up and said, hey, you guys need petabytes of storage to be able to barcode all the neurons in the brain. Well, don't worry about it, because we will be more than happy to provide that for you. So we have this big gaggle. We also find out now there's another consortium that has joined forces, and that would be IARPA, the National Science Foundation, and a semiconductor company. I think they called themselves SEC. I don't know. I'd have to find it here. I might have closed it right before the show. By the way, we just pulled this one out of the hopper, at least right now. Not hopper and chat. I mean the hopper, like hot coals. Because like 1 minute to the top of the hour, I got this little Adobe ding right in my tray saying, you have an update available. I thought I had all that crap turned off, but it was just a notification. And when that happened, it knocked my entire computer into not responding mode. So about 30 seconds for the end of the bumper, I got it all back and I got on air. So that worked out just fine. But anyway, we found out there is a semiconductor company that is working with IARPA and the National Science Foundation to create what they're calling, quote, semiconductor synthetic biology. And this is literally building little electronics. Now, there's a couple ways, actually, that we've looked at over the last few years. Little electronics such as nanowires. We saw that with a big moth the one time, and I believe also a cockroach. In the moth, they had actually inserted the nanowires into the pupa, and then it went into its chrysalis. And then when it came out with wings, it had grown around these nanowires right into its, I don't know, one of its brain components. I don't remember which one, but they literally were able to control this thing on a joystick. And there was a video we watched on air. And as this moth is flapping its wings, can you hear me? I'm flapping my arms to emulate it. It was struggling and its feet were trying to like stop itself. And they were making it go the direction they wanted it to. And, you know, when we see things like that, I don't know about you, most people don't have empathy for moths or cockroaches. And I guess if there was a big, ugly cockroach in my bed at 2 o'clock in the morning, I probably wouldn't feel so empathetic. But on the other hand, when you get to the level of just life in general and what it means to be alive and sentient, and as we're finding out here, all kinds of things have actual personalities, all these little creatures that we didn't think did, like cockroaches. Literally, science has shown cockroaches have personalities, and I believe it. They used to tell us cats didn't have feelings. Animals didn't have feelings when we were children. And we find out now, 40 plus years later, that they were absolutely 100% wrong. We find out even trees at night go to sleep. And when they go to sleep, their branches droop. And then when the sun comes up in the morning, bloop, they power back up again to start collecting their fuel. And it's very interesting that we just understand a very egocentric view of life on this planet and what it means to actually put yourself in the shoes of being, an E. coli bacteria that has been engineered and then put inside of a robotic body. We talked about that horrifying experiment yesterday. Remember, Georgie Porgy Church was the guy that actually fully reprogrammed like more than half of this genome in a living creature. First time ever, they had gone through and scanned the DNA sequence, and then they had pulled things out and put things in to determine what was necessary for life, what was necessary for function, and what could be replaceable. That's where the genetic modification comes in. They are enslaving biology. Do you realize that? That is exactly what this synthetic biologic new push, DARPA with their BTO, Biological Technologies Office, and now this IARPA conglomerate with the National Science Foundation paid for with taxpayer dollars. Like I said yesterday, we should look who funds, because I didn't look this up, funds the National Science Foundation. Because I postulated, and I'm pretty certain it's a foundation, so it includes groups such as Rockefeller, maybe even the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I don't know. Who funds it? They offer grants. They have overseas offices. I wonder where. Wait. Oh, Paris. Interesting. With the Climate Accord. Find out the National Science Foundation is based in Paris. They also have one in Beijing, China, and one in Tokyo for East Asia, except for China. But who finances this? Public attitudes, criticism, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's all taxpayer. Oh, 2000 to 2009, the National Science Foundation joined other federal agencies in the National Nanotechnology Initiative. Like, who on earth knew we had one of those? Because I don't think I did. That's pretty horrifying. Because we have looked at Eric Drexler, the father of nanotechnology, and he also is from like Harvard or MIT. Again, a part of that entire conglomerate that collaborates on all of these highly disruptive, futuristic technologies that they are rolling out and utilizing us as the willing participants because of psychology. They're able to craft the narrative. Remember DARPA's Narrative Networks program, how to manipulate your brain chemicals, tug on those heartstrings, to be able to get you to comply, to be able to get you to give them, quote unquote, what they call informed consent. You are informed of the crafted message. And because people don't have the attention span of more than a goldfish now, it's a little too difficult and a little too exhausting mentally, maybe even physically, to pull that sweater thread and start digging deeper. You know, it makes your brain hurt when you're trying to connect dots and it's a little outside of your comfort zone and you don't know anything about any of this other stuff. You know, but the plain fact of the matter is nanotechnology is a part with these little nanorobots. We also have bacteria, genetically modified bacteria, living therapeutics that they can use as little biofactories inside of you. And then we have this all out and out integration of electronic circuits with this National Science Foundation partnering with IARPA and the SRC, Semiconductor Research Corporation. And then CRISPR on top of it all, with a programming language for cells. Add to that the Brain Initiative, and then DARPA and IARPA's involvement in Georgie Porgy Church. And then the 21st Century Cures Act that, of course, was passed to speed innovation, because that pesky FDA was always standing in the way of your futuristic cures, and that's why you didn't have the cure for cancer, Jenny. But don't worry about it. Step right up, because we got it. We got it. Just take a bite. It won't hurt a bit in these little programmed, whatever they are. I don't know. We've read about a couple different things. We have bacteria with flagella that have been loaded with a payload and snipped and snapped. I don't know if they were infecting bacteria with bacteriophages, and then that bacteria went in with its CRISPR guides, and it actually snipped out parts of the virus. In some of the technologies, they were looking at even messing with our innate immune systems to be able to trigger an overproduction of T cells, to be able to overwhelm the infection. And this would be on the fly. It'd be anything that would be deemed a quote-unquote invader inside of your person. And there are some big dangers to this. There's some really big dangers to this. We've been saying for a long time, what happens when this stuff gets loose? What happens when it goes awry? I mean, we talked about AI, and we're going to get back there. We talked about AI, and once it is let into the ether, the ghost in the machine, and it starts infecting like a virus as it is evolving, just like viruses do, how are we going to turn it off when it gets smarter than us? How are we going to stop the evolution of Skynet? And now add to this component the fact that we have garnered the technology to be able to physically program life just like it were a computer chip, just like it were a computer program. You know, building these new little biological circuits is going to be just like building a breadboard with a soldering iron, except now it's going to be your little CRISPR tool and whatever else. I don't know, some organic glue of some kind. And a food source. That food source could be environmental. We found out they can use sun. They can use environmental sound waves. They can use piezoelectric for movement or sound. I mean, there's so many different ways that they can power these things that a battery supply, or even using ingredients within your body, but that was cautioned against by Eric Drexler. Don't have the robot consume the host. Not a good idea. But we are seeing like absolute insanity going on. Now, Lady Pitbull sent me a story. We had talked about them CRISPRing these E. coli, and then putting some of the E. coli brain cells into a robot. And then these brain cells actually, over a couple weeks, with just a few little tweaks, were able to learn enough to behave not like bacteria any longer, but like, quote, and this is exactly their wording, higher order, more complex animals, unquote. Now, if they can start programming bacteria to the point where bacteria start mimicking higher order living organisms such as animals, and they can hunt, that's one of the things that they had said. Wait, somewhere in here, they actually mentioned it, and it sounded to me like it was a hunting mechanism that it had taken on. Oh, yes, here it was. It was reminiscent of something that they had seen that is referred to as the, quote, stalk, pause, and strike, unquote, behavior that we see in higher order, more complex animals. That sounds like almost like a hunting instinct. Now, if they're developing predatory bacteria, and this is IARPA. No, wait a minute. Nope. This is not IARPA. Hold on, back up. This was after the IARPA story. This is Ed Young in Discover Magazine, in Wired Magazine. UK is actually quoting it. Ed Young in Discover Magazine actually described how the microbiome has a huge impact on your behavior. And in one particular case, a fruit fly on their libidos, the study of the insects, which remember, there's always been that entomological warfare component to all of this study that's been going on down deep, dark hallways, showed how changes in their gut bacteria impacted their sexual preferences. And remember that, because I want to start digging into this connection between gut bacteria and sexual preferences. It's the first I have ever heard of that connection, but I guess it makes sense if it stimulates or turns off different neurochemicals. That's an interesting one. But continuing, bacteria in the human gut can also have a huge impact on human brains, and we've established that at the Virginia Tech Laboratory, where one study took place. Biologists look at using synthetic biology, ding, to reprogram the biochemical pathways inside of cells, which are the same pathways that control your decision making at a cellular level. So this is like the neocortex of a cell almost, or maybe the orbital frontal cortex. I think that's where your decisions are made. The team wanted to look at how the decision-making process could not only be engineered, ding, bacteria first, humans next, but transplanted into a robotic host using something called a microfluid bioreactor. The plan is to build small bioreactors where cells can live and then place them on a robot so that we can have, quote, mobile robots that harbor living colonies of bacteria that direct the robot's behavior, unquote. All right, well, we had mentioned messing around with cockroaches and moths. I think one of those was a DARPA project, the moth with those little nanowires. We also have, don't forget, the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering that was the home of the Robo Bees. That was Harvard Robo Bees and Weiss. Well, now we have, Lady Pitbull, thank you very much, new genetically modified cyborg dragonflies that are now the tiniest drone. This is out of Popular Mechanics, June 1st, 2017, yesterday. As drone technology advances, one of the biggest challenges is shrinking down flying robots. Now, of course, E. coli brains in a little robot that zips around on the ground is one thing. Now let's fast forward a little bit to little what they call micro drones. And they've been experimenting with these for quite a long time. But now this is integration, just like we had heard that they were looking at doing some sort of thing between the National Science Foundation, IARPA, and the Semiconductor Research Corporation. They have now miniaturized electronics and put them into a living organism that they can direct remotely, whether it be with a joystick or some other means. The smaller drones are, the better they will be for purposes both practical, like fitting into cramped spaces, you know, such as disaster recovery, or for being devious, like spying. Scientists have turned to insects to understand how beings with tiny bodies produce the energy needed to fly for long periods of time, while our own shrunk down drones' batteries die quickly. A new experiment bypasses the study of insect flight to use living insects themselves as drones or cyborgs. DARPA's cyborg research goes way back. Thus, researchers at the Charles Stark Draper Laboratory, as well as the Howard Hughes Medical Institute, present Dragonfly Eye, an insanely futuristic cyborg dragonfly that researchers can remote control. Dragonfly Eye was created by genetically modifying regular dragonflies with quote-unquote steering neurons. in the insect's spinal cord, which are light sensitive. Ha! They're doing optogenetics again, guys. And they just splice and dice those genes, light sensitive genes, and then they can just do on and offs. On and offs make little tiny ones and zeros. Tiny fiber optic-like structures, and those are probably something like those nanowires we had seen originally, in the dragonfly's eyes, send pulses of light to their brains, functionally controlling where the insect flies via remote control. Oh, God. You know, like our remotes, when you push it, it just pulses the infrared, boop, boop, boop. You know, we just can't see that, but it is sending a signal. This is sending little fiber optic flashes. You are under our control. And the dragonfly sees spinning black and white spirals. I mean, how insane is this? You know, if they could do it to dragonflies, who's to say they can't do it to bees or cockroaches or moths or birds, plants? I mean, I don't know. The sky is the limit now. We don't even know what is going on in any of these labs. And they got this entire genomics database that it's just as easy as pushing a button, soon to be turning AI's big pulsating brain into like carrying its shit on the fly. To just see, you know, simulate it, of course, first to see what would happen. And then pumping them out and these automated biofactories or, you know, cutting and pasting to have a bacteria produce whatever the end result is. Maybe you want some sort of biofuel or poison or, you know, newfangled drug to cure you. Who knows? I mean, guys, I'm just saying this has gotten to the point where it makes my head hurt just to comprehend the daily lunacy that, I mean, even my wildest imagination couldn't have come up with some of this stuff, to be completely honest. And I have a pretty vivid imagination. This gets me excited and scared. And like, sometimes I just want to go ride my little pony, my little four-wheeler. And it's all lonely right now because I've been too busy off into the sunset. And we can play some good Daft Punk in the background as I'm driving off into the sunset. I mean, honestly, I don't know what to even do. Pulse weapons, would they even work against little cyborg dragonflies? I don't know. Anyway, this technology, and this is the story again out of Popular Mechanics, this technology is both amazing and terrifying. And it is not hard to imagine that this kind of genetic modification used on higher up species, ding, to a creepy effect. And the idea of regular looking insects acting as spies is actually a little nerve wracking. But cyborg insects could also help us understand the world in totally new ways, venturing into spaces that humans could never go. The genetic modification that allows the dragonflies to move could also be used, and I was actually thinking, could also be used to embed little cameras into their eyeballs to send back over 5G with a little wireless 5G radio that was genetically spliced and diced into the center of their wings. But they could also be used to help humans who are paralyzed. Yes, we got to pull out those heartstrings that DARPA always uses for the soldiers coming back with injuries to restore movement. Right now, scientists have only gone as far as getting the dragonfly to fly in a straight line. But remember, this is only the beginning. Like I always say, the potential here is staggering, though. But we are going to need a bit of time to get it right. So what do you think of them apples? There is a video that is embedded in this story. It is on Vimeo. I will link this in the notes so you could see. And make sure you show it to all of your friends and family. I will also put the robotic E. coli. And I will also find the one that used the rat's brain as well as the worm brain in the beginning. I mean, what's next? Honestly, what is next? So we read a story near the end of the show. Elon Musk, of course, he's another one that is involved in a lot of these technologies. He has his OpenAI project, and they are just giving it away for free. But this OpenAI is teaching AI to teach itself. And they are doing this one-shot imitation learning system where they are using virtual reality to show the robot googly eyes, i.e. the cameras, how to do a task over and over again. And then when they show the robot in real time, it already knows how to do it. Well, Google has their dueling neural networks as well. This was a story out of April. Google's dueling neural networks spar to get smarter, and there are no humans required. Now, think about this. If we are creating living, breathing organisms that are now cyborgs, and we've genetically modified them to have a specific trait, one question I have not seen answered anywhere is whether or not these traits that are being genetically modified into these organisms, whether it be E. coli or, I don't know, dragonfly, can these traits be passed down within the germline? That's something that when they were looking at CRISPRing humans, they had at first banned, and then they said, well, under some circumstances, if it's like a heritable disease that could get passed down and it would forever cause disability, maybe we could snip that out because we're not really adding anything. We're just cutting it out of the genome. What happens when cyborg dragonflies can create more cyborg dragonflies? And maybe during that reproduction process, there was some sort of off-target genetic deficiency that happened because of the original genetic modification. Remember CRISPR, they've kind of warned on the backside, but it's been tamped down. They have always warned that CRISPR has some off-target issues. It's not as accurate as it should be. There is a CRISPR 2.0 coming. I don't think it's quite there yet. Well, guess what? They've been CRISPRing life, CRISPRing the TARDIS, and they have finally come out with an uh-oh. In ScienceAlert.com, May 30th, 3 days ago, 2017, CRISPR gene editing can cause hundreds of unexpected mutations. Yes, yes, yes. It has been hailed as one of the most potentially transformative inventions in modern medicine, bringing the prospect of designer babies closer than any other technology to date. But CRISPR-Cas9 could be riskier than we thought. Aw, for all you people that hopped right in line, step right up. We may got a little problem, Clyde. The technology could spark a gene editing revolution, but it has been caught introducing hundreds of unintended mutations into the genome. Oh, no. With scientists already testing it in humans, and it has set off some serious alarm bells. Now, wait, what about all of that bacteria that they've been CRISPRing in the lab? Oh, no. Nobody's saying. They're just saying. But I'm just saying, this could be really huge. And as, you know, we've heard this drumbeat, there could be a pandemic. Uh-oh. Look out, people. And then they pulled out Bill Gates to go, yeah. Well, within the next 10 to 15 years, it could be something serious, but don't worry about it, because Obama inked an executive order that said that we're in charge of the health of the planet. We got these nifty new vaccines that'll help inoculate you against anything that ails you. We got WMD Clappy came out and warned gene editing could get in the hands of rogue agents, or it could happen accidentally or on purpose. We had DARPA looking at digital rights management to lock down your genome. And if we happen to have a lab that did something kind of, whoops, a little bit bad, like CRISPRed bacteria that then got out of hand, maybe started reacting a way it shouldn't have. Did anybody see, and I know I hate referring to television, but one of the most intellectual shows, at least that kind of integrates real science and kind of some interesting engineering concepts in it, is Doctor Who, and it has been a staple of BBC television since, I believe, the 60s, if not at least the early 70s. And they have continued Doctor Who through 13, 14, 15 different doctors now. He always dies, but he's got the ability to regenerate. And then is something, again, another news story just came out. They've been working on that in California, studying newts and things that regenerate body parts. And now they're looking at ways to potentially integrate those traits into other organisms. And in the future, maybe humans. Our liver has the ability to regenerate itself, but none of our other body parts yet. But anyway, Doctor Who, every week they seem to be right on with some of the things that are going on in the news. And this week was no... now I just lost my train of thought. This week was no exception. There was a lab, and they were all in biohazard suits, but it was a corporation. It was not a government institution. And every week, they would have to go in and check on these plants that they were growing in some sort of, I don't know, it looked like a enclosed greenhouse. And the one guy who, there were two people, there was a girl and a guy, and the girl seemed like she was right on the money, but the guy, he was going out drinking every night and would come in all hungover, and he's having like this week-long party with all of his friends celebrating some stupid holiday. And he's sleeping, sitting with his head on the dashboard, and all of a sudden, the one researcher was in doing the weekly like stats or whatever of these plants growing, and the watering system turned on, and all the plants like melted. And whatever happened, happened, and it ends up what really happened was that whatever they had just created in the lab, and this was the guy who was hungover, just actually created some super like bacteria that it was, if it had been unattended, would have wiped out all life on planet Earth within the next year because it shut down all biological systems. Now, like, what are the chances? What are the chances that something like this would be a topic du jour on a pretty mainstream, I don't know if Doctor Who's really mainstream. BBC really isn't mainstream, but a lot of people watch it, but I like it. It was really good. Highly, highly recommended. If you haven't seen at least some of these newer ones, or even just this whole new series has been mostly good, you should at least catch an episode or two. But this last week's was pretty incredible. I think maybe even on their YouTube site, they have each week they put an episode up there. So if it's there, I'll link it. But they were able to be saved if they sold out all of humanity to these evil transdimensional demons that wanted to conquer the planet. The only key was that you had to give your consent through love and that you really wanted to save the planet, but then you would be forever ruled by this evil transdimensional race. But you know, it's almost, when you start thinking about everything, guys, I don't know. I say watch the episode and then tell me what you think in the notes of the show. Anyway, I digress. So we have this CRISPR technology now that they are coming out going, uh-oh, we may have hundreds of off technology edits or off genome edits that we were not intending. And we are not only experimenting in bacteria and bacteria of all types, bacteria with little flagella that can actually motor around in its environment. Says we feel it's critical that the scientific community consider the potential hazards of all of these off-target mutations caused by CRISPR, including single nucleotide mutations and mutations in non-coding regions of the genome. Ding! Non-coding, like ones that they have determined are necessary for survival. Remember, we looked at how they were kind of methodically going through a genome, a sequence of an organism. We read about a few of the experiments that they had done, and what they literally do is go through and they pull things out, put things in, pull things out, put things in. Like when any of us that have an engineering type mind don't have a user's manual, and how many of us even look at the user's manual? Only after we can't figure it out, then we're like, what the hell? But when you don't have a user's manual and you're trying to figure out how something ticks, that's exactly what you do. But in the process, you figure out what makes it work and what makes it not work. And so what makes it not work are the ones that you don't want to touch if you're trying to like prove that it's a miraculous cure. But it's definitely the ones that if you want to kill something, that's where you target. So anyway, Tsang and his team have conducted the first whole genome screening of a living organism that has undergone CRISPR editing to discover that unwanted mutations can crop up in areas that are totally unrelated to the targeted genes. These mutations have likely been missed by previous studies, you think? You think they were just missed? Whoops! Or did they just let them slide? Thanks, FDA! I mean, seriously, that's pretty much what the FDA did for us before the 21st Century Cures Act. These mutations have likely been, quote-unquote, missed, my quotes added, by previous studies because they have been using computer algorithms that are designed to identify and scan areas on the genome that are most likely to be affected based on what is edited. So look at that. They weren't even doing full genome scans after the fact to see if anything else had changed. This is this what they call define fake news is. This is only pulling out the information that's advantageous to sell your product or to sell your idea, but not looking at the things that would make your idea or product or fake science, dangerous science, look like potentially has, you know, drawbacks. This is really horrifying, but this time it's not just a story about something that may be like the earth is flat that everyone jumps on board as some sort of psychological experiment against how dumb the public really is. This is reprogramming cells, reprogramming living organisms, only to find out that, oops, there's a lot of stuff that isn't quite working right. This predictive algorithm seems to do a good job when CRISPR is performed in cells or tissues in a dish. But whole genome sequencing has not been employed to look for all off targets, even in living animals, says one of the team. Oh, I wonder how much that cost to get that off of the testing table. Wow. But if you've somehow missed the CRISPR-Cas9 hype train, we started hearing about it a few years ago, and I believe we drew it back to 2012, 2013. When researchers started using a protein to seek out a particular gene and then cut it out of the genome, replacing the DNA with their choice. For example, they could swap out a defective gene with a healthy one. And unlike so many promising medical inventions, CRISPR has continued to live up to its potential, including like cancer treatments. Now, in recent years, it has been used to tap into, yes, cancer's control center to repair a mutation that it causes, such as blindness, or treat a genetic disease in living animals, and even modify human embryos to figure out what causes infertility and miscarriage. And I saw that they were even looking to treat a congenital blindness. They were talking about cystic fibrosis genes and a few other things that tend to be genetic. So while there have been signs of off-target mutations occurring in the preliminary trials, that has not stopped the technology from making its way into humans. Now, how much do I have to, like, point out that this stuff is bad? And look, the train never stopped. Look, there is just money running this out of control. And we are headed toward a rickety overpass over a big ravine. And it's one of those old school train tracks that's made of, like, rotted wood. And it has big vines growing all over it. You know, and when you go over it, it creaks. I don't know, Indiana Jones, make sure you grab on to the woven ladder so you can at least swing down and save the stolen idol. I mean, this is really frightening. Do not worship the stolen idol. These monsters that have created these technologies and have allowed them to proliferate globally all in the name of democratizing science and innovation have created another class, a class that has the capabilities of creating and destroying life at a scale that we have never known before. They have elevated themselves to godlike status. They want us to worship their knowledge, and they're going to demand it. They're going to demand your subservience. They are going to connect you to the machine. They are going to make you part of the machine. And, you know, this evolution that is happening at an exponential rate. And they are now looking at integrating technology into biology as an everyday thing and be able to splice and dice. And now, whoops, splice and dice and targets. I mean, now, of course, this has come out, so they're going to have to put a lot of time, money, and effort into refining these technologies with CRISPR 2.0, Problem Reaction Solution. You know, they have something that'll be able to take its place, and they will be able to get even better at targeting those places, not only to cure, but to kill. In fact, some researchers are predicting that this could trigger some serious competition with some of the CRISPRing projects that are underway in China, UK, and the US. Of course, it's going to become a new bio war. It's a kind of biomedical equivalent of the original space race. I think this is going to trigger Sputnik 2.0, a biomedical duel. This is the story, not me. On progress between China and the United States, says Carl June, an immunotherapist at the University of Pennsylvania and scientific advisor on next year's U.S. CRISPR trial. So I guess it's going to be next year, the CRISPR trial. It's supposed to be in December, and I guess it never happened. Now researchers have found evidence that the unwanted mutations brought on by CRISPR in living animals could be more widespread than we thought. Whoops. Again, what about the bacteria they've been CRISPRing all over? Nobody's talking about that. Tsang and his team sequenced the entire genome of two mice that had undergone CRISPR gene editing in a previous study, and one was a healthy control. They were looking for any mutations linked to the technology, including those that only altered a single nucleotide, which is a molecule that serves as the building block of DNA and RNA. They found that the technique had successfully corrected a gene that caused blindness in the mice. But, and if I'm not mistaken, this blindness CRISPRing on a human actually was happening in the UK. It was a genetic blindness from birth. So they found that the technique had successfully corrected a gene that had caused blindness in the mice, but the two mice that had undergone the CRISPR gene editing had sustained more than 1,500 unintended single nucleotide mutations and more than 100 larger deletions and insertions. None of these DNA mutations were predicted by the computer algorithms. Ding! Holy crap. None of these that are widely used by researchers to look for off-target effects, the team reports. You can see the results of the two gene-edited mice below, including the intended single nucleotide mutations and larger deletions and insertions in the first two rows. And these are all kinds of things that make no sense to me. But if there are any scientists out there, geneticists, who want to see this study and the study results, I will put this in the notes. This is beyond horrifying. To be clear, the find does not necessarily mean that CRISPR is unstable for use in humans going forward now. What about bacteria? And more research is now needed. Of course, we need a bigger pocketbook to see if these results can be replicated in larger samples and in humans rather than mice. So who wants to step up and get untethered CRISPR mutations to be part of the study? Holy crap. Maybe they'll do it on a chip. Voice Institute, humans on a chip. But it is like discovering that a medical treatment that could be potentially, that could be having potentially serious and long-term side effects, and then our tests aren't picking them up. And I'm going to add whether it is accidentally or on purpose. Makes you wonder, because it seems that we have a lot of the same individuals that keep floating around in the back end of this technology, and not just this technology. I'm talking about all technologies, all these disruptive technologies that are going to be in your face in the not too distant future and in your body and in your homes and apparently flitting around in your backyard. We are still very upbeat about CRISPR. And you know, here's the thing I'm going to tell you. Don't let this set you back, because CRISPR is coming. There are some very powerful individuals and powerful institutions that are funding all of this research and who are actually doing this research and pushing it out into the mainstream. And so CRISPR is not going to be over. They just are going to get more of your money to further your enslavement, to be able to get better at it and to be able to target things more accurately. And once they have released this, well, one thing to know, the price of these CRISPR stocks probably are going to tank with this news. So maybe it's time to buy, 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 because in the future, this stuff is going to make a lot of people a bazillion dollars, all at the expense of every living creature on this planet. So they say, while we are still upbeat about CRISPR, says one of the team, Minit Mahjan from Stanford University, he says, we're physicians, and we know that every new therapy has some potential side effects, but we need to be aware of what those side effects are. The research has been accepted for an upcoming edition of Nature Methods. Amazing they're going to let them publish it. So where do we go from here? So we find out that we have this genetically modified dragonfly now, that they have integrated these optical little components into their eyes, and as they flash, they direct their locomotion. They have actually enabled what they are calling quote unquote steering neurons. And we now have AI that is going to be integrated with this technology on the back end. Of course, it's having a little trouble identifying off-target genetic consequences of CRISPR engineering, but that does not mean that they can't have AI learn how to play a video game. And that is something that they have been teaching it to do. We read about AlphaGo, and AlphaGo was just the beginning. That was the very first time that an artificial intelligence, and that was Google's AlphaGo, and I think that was an acquisition. I don't think they developed that in-house. They purchased that from a UK company. We looked at their profile. I think they are still kind of separate as well, but they operate under the Alphabet umbrella. Well, they had a round two match against the champion, world champion, former world champion, AlphaGo player, and this Google AI. And after 60 matches against top Go players online earlier this year under the name of Master, and after recently defeating Ki Jae, the world's best human player, not once but twice, the AlphaGo AI has become the ultimate Go Master. Guys, this is one of those moments in human history that we will never forget, or maybe we will, because it'll just get lost in the clamor. But we shouldn't forget. This is beating a human, and a very intelligent human, the champion human, in a very complicated game that probably the majority of the American public couldn't even comprehend. And this AI has taught itself, by playing against itself, by playing in virtual reality, how to become more intelligent than humans. In theory, this was quite a good strategy on Jay's part. Key Jay's strategy this time around was to make the game as complex as possible, hoping he could force AlphaGo into making a mistake by poorly connecting its own stones. He was hoping, in theory, that AlphaGo is still just a machine that cannot, quote-unquote, connect the dots, unquote. Like I've said, connecting the dots is how intelligence is defined. And if it can't connect the dots like a human can, well, then it might not win. But guess what? It was able to look at the bigger picture on the board. It was able to elevate itself and look down to figure out those future timelines. The artificial intelligence beat his smarty pants. Well, Google, they have their dueling neural networks that are sparring to get smarter, and no humans are required. The day Richard Feynman died, and I actually remember that, I got to see Richard Feynman in person at the University of Buffalo back in like 1988. Two of my engineer geek friends took me, my boyfriend and his roommate, took me to go see Feynman. At the time, I didn't know who he was. I was like, oh, great. Another old crusty in a physics lab talking about stuff. It's actually a lecture hall. But Richard Feynman was one of the great pulsating brains on the level of someone like an Einstein, who was still living, a legend of his time, back when we were still around, but we didn't understand science at that level at that point. But the day Richard Feynman died, the blackboard in his classroom read, "What I cannot create, I do not understand." Well, when Ian Goodfellow explains the research that he is now doing at Google's Brain, which is the central artificial intelligence lab at the internet's most powerful company, he joins to this aphorism from the iconic scientist, Caltech professor, and best-selling author. But Goodfellow isn't referring to himself or any other human being inside of Google. He is talking about the machine. What AI cannot create, quote, it does not understand, unquote. Goodfellow is among the world's most important AI researchers. And after a brief stint at where, Elon Musk, OpenAI, the Google Brain competitor, run by Sam Altman and Elon Musk, he returned to Google building new research groups that explore, quote unquote, generative models. These are systems that create photos, sounds, and other representations of the real world. And those are those nightmarish images. And nodding to Feynman, Goodfellow described his efforts as an important path to all sorts of future artificial intelligence. If AI can imagine the world in realistic detail, imagine how realistic images and realistic sounds this can cause AI to learn about its structure in the world that actually exists. You know, this is almost like getting AI to start dreaming, kind of like our brains do. And while it's dreaming, it starts figuring things out. Well, here we go. Google researchers are teaching their AIs to build its own more powerful AI. What could possibly go wrong? And this is where we ended yesterday. This is where we're going to end the week. Google has announced May 19, 2017, out of ScienceAlert.com, another big push into artificial intelligence, unveiling a new approach to machine learning where neural networks are used to build better neural networks, essentially teaching AI to teach itself. Now, couple this with IARPA, National Science Foundation, and Georgie Porgy Church and some of their brain research initiatives by barcoding neurons, and you'll see where this is going. These artificial neural networks are designed to mimic the way the brain learns, add a little bit of biological technology, and we got a big pulsating, real synthetic brain. Google says this new technology called AutoAML can develop networks that are more powerful, efficient, and easier to use. We hope that AutoML will take the ability that a few PhDs have today, and it will make it possible in 3 to 5 years for hundreds of thousands of developers to design new neural networks, little mini synthetic brain balls, for their particular needs. Machine learning, getting computers to make their own decisions based on sample data, is one approach to develop artificial intelligence, and it involves two major steps, training and inference. And that is basically making it aware of its circumstances and the consequences of what it does. So where does this lead? Well, this leads to shape-shifting immune systems of the internet. Brand new story out of Forbes, cybersecurity by Marina Yao. Could AI defend our financial institutions against hackers? And remember, this is out of that Cyber Grand Challenge. The company came out of Carnegie Mellon University that first had launched some of the self-thinking, self-reacting immune systems of the internet to combat cybercrime. Of course, we have those damn Russians hacking everything. Could artificial intelligence defend us against thieves, barbarians, and our protectors at our digital gates? Or will machine learning be one more addition to cyber criminals' ever-growing arsenal? And I just saw that there was some NSA software that had been accidentally launched called Pandemic on the internet. I thought the name was interesting considering all this crazy stuff that is going on. And now there might be some sort of virus out there that is out of WikiLeaks' brand new release called Pandemic. While recent WannaCry ransomware attacks infected over 230,000 computers in 150 countries, it reveals, of course, how most institutions fail, even at their most basic defense levels. But what can we do? Well, the rise of cloud computing, the Internet of Things, and dependence on third-party vendors add another layer of mandatory maintenance. So though there are some new technologies, we may be looking at something else. We need a cybersecurity as a neighborhood watch or a community police activity. And don't worry about it, because we will get better at defending. DARPA Dan was looking at how to keep the internet safe. All right, guys. Well, if you can even believe it, another hour has gone by. Make sure you have an awesome Friday. An awesome weekend, all kinds of new shows. Lonnie Clark has a live show up next, and this whole weekend is going to be loaded with all kinds of knowledge. So I will catch up with you on Monday. Everybody, take care. Skateboard.